Hey, welcome to the Bill Bennett Show. Welcome back. We have thoughtful conversations about the news of the day, address the existential threats to America, and talk about basically whatever we want to talk about, Claude and I, right, Claude?
Basically, yeah.
Today we'll catch up with Gordon Chang, a columnist, a blogger, TV pundit, author, and lawyer. It was all about China. Wait till you hear what he has to say about China. First, though, there are a few things I'd like to discuss. Claude, let's talk classified and secret documents.
Mm-hmm.
Did Mike Pence just save Joe Biden?
Maybe.
One of the headlines, I think, on one of the shows last night, maybe Tucker Carlson or something, was, did Pence just save Biden? The offense of having classified documents in your house, which you're not supposed to have, which is an offense, a felony, mm-hmm. or a crime anyway, is trivialized by repetition.
Right.
You know, the more people who have it, you say, well, you know, this is a bloodless thing. A murder is not trivialized by repetition. Beating up people, stealing isn't trivialized. But something like this, you say, oh, my God, classified documents in Mar-a-Lago. And people go nuts, or liberals go nuts. And then classified documents of Biden, and a lot of people went nuts, a lot of conservatives. I wasn't sure. I'll say something about that because there is a difference here.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden Pence has them. And a lot of people do. And I think the big fuss about it is probably going nowhere. That is, having the simple fact of having these documents is going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many of these guys have it, and probably more to come. Makes me want to look in my files. But
maybe you shouldn't say that on a podcast. You might have the FBI coming outside your house.
Yeah, I know. But I don't have anything. I mean, I never saw. I saw some, but I was in a skiff, and I never took anything out. So I'm not worried about that. They're welcome to look. But you know, Penn says, "Well, geez, I have some." This kind of lets Biden off the hook on the simple matter of having classified documents. Now, the difference is, for Biden, is the content of these documents.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a little complicated, but the New York Post has done a very thorough review of Hunter's emails. And Hunter's emails, you know, from that computer, show a lot of things. One of the things that's in there is a 1,300-word document about Ukraine and Russia and trade and related things, which reads like a classified document. And this has been printed in the New York Post and elsewhere. And if you read it, and I've read it, either he was very competent in international affairs or he's borrowing from a document. Therefore, if Hunter Biden is looking at classified documents that his father brought home or brought to the garage or brought to wherever, and using those documents, first of all, what the hell is he doing reading them? Mm-hmm. Not allowed to do that. But then using them to make money by spilling their contents out to people in order to show that he knows what he's talking about, and thus to get, you know, an increased amount of money from them because of his know-how and sophistication. The email he sends doesn't sound like Hunter Biden. It sounds like a classified government document.
When you take a look at, you know, what happened, you know, I just can't help but to think that if there wasn't this huge hoopla made about President Trump and these documents before, and we're thinking, what, August 2022, when the FBI raid happened, that this wouldn't be such of a big deal with President Biden, and neither would the stuff with Vice President Pence.
Yeah, if you're taking those seriously, the simple fact of having top secret documents, whatever their content.
Mm-hmm.
If you took it seriously for Trump, you need to take it seriously for Biden. You need to take it seriously for Pence. All I'm saying is the simple fact of having these classified documents for all three of them, in the end, simple fact of the possession is not going to amount to much. That's right. My prediction.
Right.
However, if the contents of the documents that Biden has
mm-hmm.
were lifted by Hunter for his own purposes of enrichment, then you got something real and very serious.
Which, by the way, has already been the suspicion of many people when it comes to the Hunter Biden laptops and all the other kind of business dealings, with no real substance to having a reason to do business dealings overseas other than who your father is. And by the way, let's not forget that the Department of Justice have had the Mar-a-Lago documents since August. And we haven't heard anything about what's in those, possibly because there's just nothing there, like you said. These could be different. Could be different.
That's right. That's my point. That's my point. So here's Hunter writing about, you know, the effects of certain trade policies, the effects of certain other kinds of policies on, you know, the situation in Ukraine, Russia, and a voice that isn't his.
Mm-hmm.
All you got, if you can match up his email language with language in documents found in Biden possession, the goose is cooked. However, will the Justice Department pay attention to this? Biden's Justice Department, the special counsel who's been hired, will he? He should. He's supposed to. He's supposed to be nonpartisan. That is, and even if he does, he makes a recommendation to Merrick Garland and the Justice Department as to what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's assume the worst. Let's assume that Hunter Biden lifted the language borrowed, read these classified documents, borrowed from them to show he was a big shot in the know and made money on it. And the special counsel finds that and sends that to justice and says this is a very serious offense. This Justice Department, Biden's Justice Department, may just bury it.
I mean, even talk about the voice of the emails that, you know, that may not match, you know, Hunter Biden's voice, but also the weight of who he is. And why would he even know this stuff and have any, like, the position and just who he is doesn't may not even match the level of knowledge that's in those emails. Like, well, why or how would he know this? So if the language doesn't match or the voice doesn't match, but then also the weight of the person's access to what's actually in the email doesn't match either. It's a clear, it would be obvious. It would be obvious. Right.
That, if that's the case, you got a critical and serious offense going on here. And if that's the case, and the special counsel sees it, the special counsel has to make recommendations to the Justice Department. And at that point, the Justice Department must act, not regardless of whether it's Biden, Trump, or Pence,
mm-hmm.
but will it?
Well,
because this Justice Department does not look impartial.
Here's the only reason why I think that it could. And I hate to get super political with it and borderline conspiracy theory with it. But suppose those in the DOJ and the liberal elites understand that we cannot run Joe Biden again in 2024.
Yeah.
What if this is the way out?
Cook his goose this way.
What if it is? And then it's like, well, we'll go on this and get him out the way and make the way clear for someone else.
Michelle Obama.
That's what Brian Kennedy says. That's what Mr. Kennedy says.
Yeah, I know. That's what people think because, you know, she is about the most popular woman in America. Did you know that she is probably the most popular woman in the world?
Everybody loves her. Everybody loves her. I mean,
I don't, but
you know, we may get email. And by the way, BillBennettPodcast@gmail.com. I'm fine with her. I mean, not as a presidential candidate, but I mean, just as a person. I mean,
she's a fashion girl, right? Mm-hmm. The big fashion.
Right.
She, you know,
Ivy League mom,
planted a little garden in the White House, but you know, I mean, really?
She shouldn't be president. I'm not saying she should be president. I'm just saying that she doesn't bother me.
I know she didn't bother you. It didn't bother me particularly either. But,
right.
But, you know, I think Brian said, I don't want to misquote him, but let's just say a lot of people think if she ran, you know, against DeSantis, mm-hmm. she could beat him even without cheating, you know?
Yeah, no. Well, on popularity alone. Yeah. Sure.
Because the American people like popularity and they like her.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And they don't see any sharp edges to her. And boy, you know, Santas, whatever you think of him, and I think the world of him, is getting a lot of edge
because
of the things he's doing.
Well, how great was he on the, you know, the headline that comes out because the press does this is the Florida government does not approve the new African-American history curriculum. He goes on television and he says, well, it's what they're trying to push is not African-American history. There's, you know, queer theory, there's LGBTQ plus A stuff. Like, we already have an American history, African-American history course thing, you know, in the Florida Department of Education. And why are they trying to attach themselves to African-American studies? Do your own thing. It doesn't, and he was clear. And to be honest with you, there was a and I've seen it on social media and elsewhere that there is a lot of support from him from super liberal Black Americans who do not want the LGBTQ plus, you know, A plus movement attaching themselves to, you know, the African American movement.
This is the African American course for AP American
history. Correct.
We're talking about. Now, I understand, I haven't read it, but I understand that even conservatives who have read it say that three quarters of this thing is fine, even very, very good. The history, American history and African Americans, slavery, Reconstruction, everything, Martin Luther King. But it's that last quarter which gets into queer theory, LGBTQ. And I think that's right. But I want to lose the point here. Mm-hmm. This guy still has a lot of edge. You may agree with him, but he's got teeth and he's showing it. And when they do that, people go, oh, gee, I don't know. Is he opposed to Disney? And meanwhile, you know, Michelle is for everything, right?
Yeah, everything's good. It's all good. Yeah.
No sharp edge. All right. So back to what I was saying. If they can connect the classified documents with Hunter Biden, Biden, and they do it, Biden's goose is cooked.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And this may be something they want to do. That's what you're saying. And I agree. A final thing here, and I'd like the audience to help me. I'm starting to lose confidence in our support of Ukraine. And maybe I've been listening to Tucker Carlson too much. I don't know. I love the audience, but it is a corrupt government. I guess 30 or 40 of them resigned just yesterday or day before. You know, they found one guy just driving a Lamborghini. Is that a car, a Lamborghini?
Yes.
In Spain, you know, very expensive. He took $7 million of the money that we gave them. One of the most corrupt governments in the world. I don't know if Zelensky is, but it has been. That's why Hunter was able to take advantage of it. And are we giving our military capability? I mean, it just seems we're sending so much stuff. Now we're going to do Abrams tanks. Really? Are we giving up stuff we may need to defend ourselves or to send overseas in some struggle? Mm-hmm. To defend American democracy? And do they care more about the borders of Ukraine than about our own? I don't mean that rhetoric, but seriously, I mean, I think the offense at the southern border is an invasion. And, you know, do people in Congress think, you know, the thing going on by Russia is more important than what's going on the southern border? I don't. I'm maybe being...
Well, Trumpian, right? I mean, at the risk of starting an email, flood. Sure. Wasn't it Trump with the America First, you know, and we can help everyone else out, but aren't there?
That's me.
Yeah.
That's me.
Well, and by the way, you can Lamborghinis, you can find 2022 Lamborghinis anywhere from $200,000 to $520,000.
I think it was Lamborghini. I'm not. Okay. How about them Cowboys? We won't talk about that.
So you had a line that had my wife, Sierra, cracking up. We were talking about the Oscars, and you had made mention that the Woman King didn't get any nominations.
The movie that she wanted you to see?
That was the movie she wanted me to see, even though a football game was going on. Now, by the way, I did watch the movie, and I loved it. I thought it was a great movie. No Oscar nominations, and then you sent that story, and I sent back to you, how could they not nominate it? Hashtag Black Lives Matter. And then you said, watch the football game. Hashtag Dak Lives Matter.
Which it rhymes.
Which my wife couldn't stop laughing at the entire, for about 2.5 days.
What do we do with Dak?
So I think Dallas should move on. Here's, I think.
Move beyond him.
Well, yeah, I think it's best for both of them. He can't win there. They can't win with him. He doesn't have the coaching staff that can scheme beyond his limitations.
If you wanted to trade him, could you get something for him?
Well, you know, normally I don't know, but when you look at what's happening in Baltimore and Green Bay with Lamar Jackson and Aaron Rodgers, and Derek Carr is going to leave Vegas, I think you've got three guys who are, you know, well, two of them definitely better than Dak is. You know, Derek Carr probably the same guy, but maybe a different location kind of, you know, resets these guys. If I'm Dallas, I'm willing to send Dak and Zeke and a first or second round pick to Green Bay for Aaron Rodgers or to Baltimore for Lamar Jackson. I don't know what Derek Carr's contract is in Vegas, but I'll do a straight-up Carr for Dak. Why not?
Would people take Dak?
I think so. I think so. I mean, he's easily top 15. Now, the issue is the coaching. He doesn't have the talent to offset the coaching mistakes the team makes, you know, Kellen Moore and McCarthy. But McCarthy and Moore don't have the coaching ability to offset the mistakes that he makes as a player. They're all limited in the same way in their different spheres of influence with the team. And so you need a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, who, despite the limitations of Kellen Moore, Mike McCarthy's play calling, can still make things happen. Or you need a coaching staff that can coach around Dak's limitations, even though he's a good quarterback. He's good.
Is he?
I think so.
I'm beginning to have my doubts. I mean, I if you're a really good quarterback, you don't choke in these big games.
Those two interceptions were bad. They were bad.
I mean, these are the games you got to win. But, you know, some people say it's the offensive coordinator. Why do you keep throwing passes to the side when there's 35 seconds to go? You know, you got to go downfield. I don't know. It's very frustrating. But, you know, I lost my shirt. You know, I lost 50 cents on these games. I just, you know, my bills just fell apart.
Yeah.
You know. Those Bengals are good.
Burrow to Chase. They say that's the new Montana the Rice.
I am going to say Kansas City will beat Cincinnati. And I guess Philadelphia beats San Francisco, you think?
So San Francisco's the case where I'm thinking, you know, they've got the right coach. He takes whether it's Garoppolo, it doesn't matter. He gets them far. And, you know, and that's another thing about Dak. I mean, you know, you lose that game to a guy who was he's the first team quarterback on the 49ers. He's the last pick of the draft last year.
Stop. Enough on that. I know it's your Cowboys.
I know.
Stop.
I'm sorry. My bias is okay. I would go Philadelphia. Yeah. And by the way, even as a Cowboys fan, I'm rooting for Jalen Hurts. I mean, when you saw what happened in Alabama, how, you know, again, he loses his starting job to Tua, but he doesn't cause a disruption. He finishes that season and the next season, then transfers as a senior to Oklahoma, stand-up guy. I'd love to see him win a Super Bowl. He was very humble and was a team player, and seems like a good guy.
Yeah, no, it does. And he's got the Alabama connection.
Mm-hmm.
Devontae Smith.
Smith, yeah.
Devontae Smith. Yeah, he's the guy who took out Jalen Hurts. They put in Tua. You remember?
I do.
And he got sacked and looked terrible for Alabama. And the next play threw a long pass the end zone. It was Devontae Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, enough on that. But don't go wandering in the woods to overcome your grief about the Cowboys.
I'm having a hard time dealing with that. Can you tell?
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of Cowboys fans are. Even have one guy who's one of the Fox hosts, Will Cain, on TV. He was saying, "I need a few more days." You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that anybody feels it worse than the Bills fans, so, you know.
Right. Yeah.
They really thought this was their year. They had a home game, and it wasn't even close, really. All right, we may just not talk to Claude for a couple of weeks, but send the emails when they come, Claude. You just pass them along to me. I don't want them wandering in the woods and getting wet.
Yeah, no, I'll make sure that's send them directly to you.
All right. We all got to overcome things. Okay. Thanks, folks. And where do they send their emails, Claude?
BillBennettPodcast@gmail.com. Drought, inflation, and new policies are pushing America's food supply to a likely breaking point. Now, I'm not trying to scare you, but the time for a survival food plan is now. Head to 4patriots.com and check out their 25 super survival food plans. That's the number 4patriots.com. And right now, use the code BILL to save 10% on your first purchase of anything in the store. These compact kits are sturdy, water-resistant, and stack easily for storage. Delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners are ready in just 20 minutes. In addition, 4 Patriots offer free shipping on orders over $97, plus their famous one-year guarantee. They're called 4 Patriots because a portion of every sale is donated to charities supporting veterans and their families. Again, it's the number 4patriots.com. Use the code BILL to save 10%. That's 4patriots.com, code BILL.
Today is the day to start building your stockpile.
All right, it's time to jump in with Gordon Chang. Let's find out about these amazing numbers about China. Gordon, population decline in China. Tell me what it is, how much it is, and what it means. He wrote a great article on this. We will put a link up to it.
The National Bureau of Statistics, which is official, last week reported that China in 2022 suffered a population decline of 850,000 people. This is the first year of yearly decline since 1961. 1961 is an important year. That was the last part of the Great Leap Forward, a famine that killed somewhere between 20, 30 million on the low end, 50, 60, 70 million on the high end. The story here is not just of a one-year decline in 2022. China probably will lose something like a billion people, maybe 900 million people, but in that range between now and the end of this century. So which means that China, which is about 1.4 billion people now, will somewhere be between 400 and 500 million at the turn of the century.
Let me pause. They lost 850,000
last year.
And you're projecting they're going to lose a billion. That's a long distance, 850,000 to a billion. How does that happen?
It happens because the Chinese people are not procreating. The total fertility rate in China, people put it, is 1.18. Total fertility rate is generally speaking, the average number of children per female reaching childbearing age. So okay. 1.18 is not replacement, which is 2.1. Some people, some demographers say that China's total fertility rate is not 1.18, but is more like 0.9.
Wow.
Okay. And so you just apply that number over the course of a century and you get to the, you know, 900 million, billion people fewer.
I just want to repeat, 850,000 gets to about 900 million if you're using a 1.1 or a 0.09, right?
Yeah, it's... 0.9. It is the steepest demographic decline in history in the absence of war or disease.
So it goes from a billion four, which it is now. Is that right?
Right. It's a billion four now, and it'll go somewhere between 400 to 500 million by the turn of the century.
Wow. Unbelievable. But I thought they just loosened up. They get the two child policy. And did I read you correctly? They put in a three-child policy?
Yeah, China currently has a three-child policy. That was instituted in 2021. The end of the one-child policy, which existed between 1979 and the end of 2015, that was replaced by a two-child policy starting from 2016 to 2021. But it doesn't really matter. I mean, the Chinese could have a 15-child policy. The Chinese people are just not in the mood to reproduce.
How come? Why?
Number of factors. One of them is economic downturn. One of them is COVID, but those are just temporary factors. What is really important is pessimism in Chinese society, which is pervasive. Mm-hmm. Plus mm-hmm. also, as societies mature, their total fertility rates do drop. So this was going to happen. Something was going to happen to China, but nothing of this magnitude. So you have the indoctrination of the one-child policy for decades, which really convinced the Chinese people not to have children. And the indoctrination, it was effective. So you put that pessimism, all sorts of factors together, and you get to the point where China's facing a demographic crisis.
So this becomes, as I read you, and again, the article will be available, folks, the moment. That is, they need to move, or she needs to move, or thinks she does, right? This pushes forward the action plan, so to speak, if there is one.
Well, yeah, except that no government, and we're not talking just about China, but no government has really been that effective in increasing fertility. They can increase fertility for a year or two with incentives, but after the incentives end, population trends resume.
My point, I may have made it clumsily, is that President Xi is aware of this, and thus this is propelling him or may propel him into actions which he feels he needs to take because of time.
Yes. Two things, though. First of all, Chinese demographers, even before the institution of the one-child policy, knew that this was going to be a disaster. And that's because China, through a later, longer, fewer program, was actually able to decrease fertility from 5.9 to about 2.7. And so clearly demographic trends in China, even in the 1970s, were working to reduce fertility. And so the one-child policy wasn't needed. But the regime actually knew about a decade ago that this disaster was in the works, because they could do the arithmetic. And for various reasons, they just did not change their policies. And then there were a lot of reasons for them not changing their policy, mostly institutional. The family planning bureaucracy in the Communist Party was extremely strong and was able to prevent change. And also the party realized that the family planning bureaucracy was what was keeping the Communist Party in place in a lot of rural areas. So it was a matter of regime survival.
So what do they do then? You're looking at a country which is going to go from a billion four to 0.4. What does this mean for Chinese policy and action in the world?
Well, I think it means that Xi Jinping, for demographic and for other reasons, sees a closing window of opportunity to achieve historic goals. Because this is not the only problem they have. They have plunging property prices, which in China is more important than it would be in other societies, because property is core to the economy and to wealth accretion. They've got a contracting economy, worsening food shortages, deteriorating environment, and this COVID-19 outbreak, which is the fastest viral spread in history. So, I think Xi Jinping realizes that if he wants to accomplish what he believes are historic goals, he's got to move fast, which means he's going to take us by surprise. And so we have to be concerned that he will lash out, and that specifically he'll lash out at the United States.
What about Taiwan?
Could be Taiwan, could be India, could be Japan, could be the Philippines, or could be all of the above. But China is at a point where its incentives are to create trouble of terrible, you know.
Because the window of opportunity is closing as you move from a billion four to 4.4.
Right. Especially because Xi Jinping's idea of diplomacy is intimidation. And you can't intimidate people if your country is falling apart. And that's obvious. So while it's China needs to do it while it can, I think is the thinking that soon will prevail in Beijing. And we don't have a sense of urgency. And it's not just Biden and the civilian officials in the Pentagon. It's also the 3 and 4 stars. So we've got a really serious problem. It's society-wide. We're starting to understand that China's a threat, but we're not moving with the speed that is necessary to protect ourselves.
We're talking about possibility of world wars, what you're talking
about. Yeah. It's
defending ourselves in a war with China, which we could do now or not.
I think that we can do. That's a very, very, very long topic. But just go back to your point about world war. We got a war in Ukraine, one end of the Eurasian landmass. If China were to do something, that would be on the other end of the Eurasian landmass. And that's starting to look like global conflict.
And tell me about India. Did I read correctly? The Indian population will surpass the Chinese population soon?
If it hasn't already.
If it hasn't already. Okay.
There are Chinese demographers who will tell you that 2022 was not the peak of China's population, but it was really 2018. And if you look at demographic statistics, it appears to some, and I think they've got the better case, that India is already the world's most populous society for a number of reasons. And again, that's a very technical conversation. But the point is that this will be the first time in at least 300 years, and maybe even in history, that recorded history, that China is not the world's most populous society.
What does that mean to China, or what does that mean for policy, or what does that mean for war?
I think it drives the Chinese apoplectic because they view the Indians as inferiors. But India is a much more dynamic society right now. By the time that India's population peaks, which will be mid-century, India will have something like 700 million more people or so than China. Demographic projections can very well be off, but the projections show that, India will be a much more populous society.
Why do they care? I mean, we don't care, right? I mean, we don't care that India is much bigger than us.
We don't care. But that's part of Americans are oblivious anyway.
So what? So they have more people. But that matters to China because of Chinese pride, or has to do with the ability to do things or not?
Both.
Okay.
It is very much Chinese pride because of a China centric view of the world that Beijing has, but also with heft comes power. With a bigger population, you got a bigger military, you got a bigger economy, you got more sway in the world, and that matters to China. The question is whether India will be able to harness that huge workforce. You know, China's rise coincided with what people call the demographic dividend, which is an increase in the size of its workforce. So the Chinese know that demography matters. And, you know, as people say, demography is the fundamental maker and breaker of civilizations. And other people say, quote, demography is destiny. It's not necessarily destiny, but, you know, as great as country as Norway is, Norway will not rule the world in our lifetimes because it's just not big enough, even though one could say it's a better society. So heft does matter.
And we have our own heft problems here, right, with replacement. That's another story as well, correct?
Well, our total fertility rate is declining, but our population is not. And it's not because a lot of people want to come to the United States. And it's not just the issues at the southern border. So, in the southern border, we're getting migrants who are going to have high TFRs. So
TFRs.
The U.S. total fertility rates. So the United States is in a fairly good demographic position, especially for a developed country.
All right. Let's go back to China. So this is going to, we need to be, if we were worried about them, these factors, these demographic factors, suggest we should be worried even more and things could happen sooner. So we need to be ready for Chinese action. Now, we do see them reaching around the world. Another piece you wrote, which we will link, talks about Latin America maybe not being our backyard, but I think you conclude by saying maybe it's China's backyard. Say a word about that. We know we have to let you go soon.
Well, China appears to be more influential in Latin America and the Caribbean than we are. And that is largely
that's a hell of a statement. That's a hell of a statement. I mean, wow.
Yeah, it is a wow. China, if you take out Mexico from the calculations, China is the largest trading partner of Latin America. Soon, even with Mexico, China will be the largest trading partner. 2021, it had $450 billion in trade. You contrast that with $18 billion in trade in 2002, which was the first year after China joined the World Trade Organization. The Atlantic Council believes that China's trade with the region will exceed $700 billion in 2035.
What's our number with Latin America?
I was afraid you're going to ask that question, but it is something like around 500. I think it's like about 500 billion, maybe 525.
So it's less than the Chinese.
Well, it's more.
I forgot that first
number. Because of Mexico, because of the U.S.
I got you.
Which
theirs is growing.
Agreement.
But theirs is growing.
Theirs is growing very fast. And the reason why China is influential is not just trade, but it's also because of what's called the Pink Wave, which is the election of progressive leftist governments, which this started in 2018 with the election of AMLO, Obrador, and it has continued through last fall with the election of Lula in Brazil. In between, there were seven elections that put in power leftists, including in our long-term friend, Colombia. And there are going to be 11 elections in the region this year and next year. So we can see the trend. And these leftist governments are naturally more inclined to deal with China than they are with us.
Sure.
So this is a problem of American neglect. So it's not like the Chinese are really, that popular in Latin America. They're not. But it's just that we have decided to totally forget the region.
Yeah. Well, this all makes the case for American strength and armaments and buildups and determination and a larger presence and a more aggressive presence in the world. Because what you're telling us is the China that's been a threat for a long time is maybe an even greater threat than we thought because of this. I have one question back on the population, then we'll let you go. I know you're limited on time, Gordon. That's a long period of time for that decline. I mean, it's not that long, you said the end of the century, but it assumes the Chinese remain pessimistic, I take it. Why do we assume they'll remain pessimistic over the next 50, 60 years?
That's a critical question. And I think it's largely because I don't think the Communist Party is going to last, but most people do. And I don't see the party changing its policies internally that will get the Chinese people encourage people. There's just extreme pessimism right now. And you can understand why. And Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, has no answers to policy debacles that he's caused. And, you know, as long as he's around and people call him leader for life, I don't think he is, but people call him leader for life. So if he's around and the Communist Party's around, you can't see what's going to change. The only thing that could really change is that communism falls, they get democracy right away, and everyone then becomes optimistic about China, not only internally, but externally. That is, I think it's possible, but I'm on, you know, a very small minority. So if you look at the majority view, there's just nothing out there that's going to change this. This is baked in. Things change, as you say, but a lot of this is baked in.
30 seconds. What does all this mean for America, or what should it mean for America?
Well, as I mentioned, we just have to be prepared for China that has a very different, that calculates its interests very differently than we do. We believe that everyone thinks like us, and that's just not the case. So that's why, you know, 1941, 9/11, these dates periodically pop up where we're just totally taken by surprise by our enemies. Because we don't pay attention to what they say or what they're doing. Yeah. And to a large extent, although we understand China is a threat now, there is no consensus as to what to do, and there is no sense of urgency.
Okay, understood. We need to let you go. We know your time constraints, but this was terrific as always. Gordon Chang, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Bill, and stay safe.
Yes, sir.
Stay current on the threat posed by China with our friends at Committee on the Present Danger China. Go to presentdangerchina.org, presentdangerchina.org.
Well, that does it for today's show. To catch up on previous episodes of the show, go to thebillbennettshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter at William J. Bennett. You can like me on Facebook. Just search Bill Bennett. Feel free to email the show. I'd love to hear from you. It's BillBennettPodcast@gmail.com. Please share the podcast with your family and friends, and we'll catch up next week.